Tantrum House Board Gaming Podcast is recorded live from Studio WKRD in Greenville, South Carolina. This podcast is brought to you by our friendly local game store, Boardwalk, purveyors of fine games, Bezier Games, the new classics, AEG, We Make Fun, The Game Steward, your second chance at Kickstarter games, and Game Toppers LLC, upgrading your gaming experience. Your hosts are here to help you sort through the cardboard commotion to help you find the diamonds in the rough. So buckle up, especially if you're driving right now, because you're about to arrive at the Tantrum House.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. Today we got Will Meadows.
Sarah Meadows.
Melissa Delp.
Kevin Delp.
Katie Pills.
In the house.
And Katie Pills.
I should have said and. I'm not usually the last person to say it. And I'm not on the show that much anymore.
And Katie Pills. Yeah. Welcome to the house, everybody. We got a small crew tonight, but we've been having lots of fun. We played some games this afternoon. We're recording this on the Labor Day. So we had some watermelon, of course. Some other tasty treats. What was that Oreo action? That was tasty.
I don't know. Ryan was suddenly like, I think I'm going to make some Oreo something.
Oreo surprise.
Sure. He called it an Oreo cake, and I was like,
There's no cake, just whipped cream and Oreos.
It was put delicious. In the freezer.
No complaints.
Mm-hmm. But topped with hot fudge.
Yes.
Oh, I think I missed the
hot fudge. I was so involved in the game we were playing that I missed the dessert.
So many games on the
that
table.
That never happens to me.
We were in the middle of a game. It was a mystery game.
It was mysterious.
But before we start, we should tell us what the podcast is.
What's this episode about?
What's this episode about, Will?
Great question. So we're going to definitely be talking about games that we've been playing recently, some games that are coming to Kickstarter, and we're also obviously pretty excited about Gen Con coming up.
Woohoo!
Right now, if you're listening to this, you're probably like driving to Gen Con or Gen Can't or Gen Online. What's that one called?
Gen Can't.
Gen Can't is not happening this year.
Oh, I'm sorry. So
Gen Con Online.
Gen Con.
Okay, Gen Con Online. There we go.
You're all welcome to party. We're going to be hanging out, playing some games. We'll be talking about that in a little bit. But let's talk about some of the games that we've had on the table most recently. Anybody play anything fun? No.
Well, were we going to start with explaining the mysterious game?
It's like pure silence. Anybody have fun?
No.
Games are not fun.
Yeah, I thought we'd start with the game we all played.
All right, so we played Crimes and Capers. Mm-hmm. From Renegade Game Studios. Now, they have two that they've just released. Yep. This one was the 90s high school action drama. I don't know what it was called. What was the title?
I think it's called High School Hijinks.
Yep, High School Hijinks.
I basically said it.
It had some Saved by the Bell feel.
Yeah, definitely a little bit. Lots of unnecessary drama all over the place.
Oh, sure.
And it's an escape into the locker type game.
It's an escape room type game.
It was a mystery. We're trying to figure out a whodunit kind of thing, except there weren't any murders.
It reminded me of those old like murder mystery parties that you'd go to.
And without the murder.
Without the murder. And you're trying to figure out like the mystery. So this is cooperative, and we all take different roles. And I was the teacher's pet.
I played the nerd.
Was I the jock? I don't even know.
You were the popular kid.
You were the popular kid. We all had our own trapper keeper full of notes and information.
Yeah, about the different, like, communication.
Where we saw people, what was happening, who was doing what.
Conversations you had with people.
Melissa, you were the jock.
I was the jock, yes.
She was going to wear her volleyball jersey.
She should have. Okay. I would have been impressed.
What were you going to say, Sarah?
So I did find a shirt in my drawer from the championship volleyball tournament that I was in 1998.
Yes!
Yeah.
Which is when this game was set.
Oh, perfect.
Wow.
You should have worn it. That would have been hilarious.
That would have been awesome. You should have done that. I would have been so impressed.
Will still has some of his karate shirts that he won't let me throw away, also from 1998.
They're great with like American flag sleeves and crazy clip art kickboxing.
I could totally see you as like the karate kid in that.
Yeah, I will never wear these shirts again, but I can't throw them away. They're too great. They're like,
I'll help you, Sarah.
Black Belt Camp 1989.
We got a whole tote of t-shirts in the garage.
Tote. More than I thought.
So Renegade Games has published, like Will was saying, two different these mystery boxes, the High School Hijinks, and then the other one is Lady Leona's Last Wishes. Melissa and I actually were able to play that over the weekend, and we actually had a crew over, and we all dressed up in
You did dress up for that one.
Yes, we have pictures on Twitter that you can check out. We in 1920s vibe, I was a footman, and Melissa was the oldest granddaughter.
Oldest granddaughter, yes.
And then Hannah and Charlie were there, and then other our other friends, Ben and Paul Michael, and there was upper class and lower class, and we all...
The upstairs and the downstairs.
So you were all told beforehand who you were going to be and how you needed to dress.
Correct.
For
yes. Okay. And that's
the
kind
same
of,
setup where you had your own little dossier per character.
Yeah, so I was going to say, comparing the two, since Melissa and I played both, it's very similar in the setup in that you get your little dossier with your little information, and then there's also, at least in these two games, there's a box and there's basically a lock.
Padlock
that you have to find a three-digit code throughout the beginning of the game to figure out how to open the box. So very similar in that, but I would say the way that the game presented itself at the beginning in order to figure out what that padlock code was, totally different. Because in Lady Leona's Last Wishes, it was sort of a story that we were walking through and we were figuring out certain pieces of the story and information as we told the story with each other's information.
Ah. Yeah, it was more of this is what happened at the party, and you had to piece together what happened at what times and things that Lady Leona had seen during that party.
Because
so we
she
knew,
died.
Yeah, we knew exactly what we needed to find out. We just needed to piece it together. Whereas the high school
was
one,
it written like from her perspective?
Yeah, there was a lot of like she had given sort of information before she passed away, and she had hidden the will, sort of thing. I think the whole concept of the game really worked well in what we were trying to accomplish, how we were supposed to do it. She gave information, you know, she's dead now, but we're all sort of working together. Can we find the will and open the thing? And then we'll get to the second part in a second.
Right.
But
and this one, it was much more like
chaotic.
This one girl left random scraps around that didn't necessarily actually go together. You kind of had to just assume this note must go to this thing, and sooner or later we'll figure out her locker combination.
Yeah, so I would say that the high school one was much more puzzly, felt more like an escape room, mm-hmm. and it even had some of those frustrating moments of what do we even
paper together seven times?
Yeah. I would definitely say a lot of puzzles. There were a couple puzzles that I felt were misleading, maybe is the word, where...
Red herring or just
No,
like-
just like we did, like it was showing you one picture and you didn't, like once you know what the actual answer was... It didn't match.
How are we supposed to know that?
How would we even figure that out? Because that basically it was unsolvable.
Wasn't clear enough,
yeah. But then you open the box and you then have a sort of a second puzzle in that you were trying to figure out the suspect in the high school hijinks. In the other one, you're trying to figure out
where the will is.
And, I don't know. I feel like the first one, Lady Leona's, was sort of like a really big buildup to figure out how to open the box. And you felt like you're going to have a whole like another 30 to 45 minutes play time. Mm-hmm. And it really took about 5 to 10 minutes.
Oh,
once we opened the box, though, just the way it was built around where that room was and where the will was, it was just everyone was like, oh, it's there.
That's it.
Is that the game? Like, so we were sort of let down because we had sort of all dressed up. We were thinking it was going to be an hour and a half game. We did the whole game in 45 minutes. So
yeah, we played the other one pretty quickly tonight. I have to admit that for the size of box it was, I did expect it to be a little more for some reason. Like a lot of the escape rooms in boxes, they go with a smaller size box. It looks more affordable. You know, I don't know. Some of them still cram a ton of puzzles into them.
Yeah,
this one. Very large box, pulled out, you know, another large box and a couple of scraps of paper.
But I would say there's much more a lot more different puzzles in the high school hijinks.
Yeah.
So
even though it's just
paper. Yeah. Even though there are scraps, the Renegade, but the people designing it are the same people that designed the Werewolf Experiment.
Oh, really?
That we've all played.
I wouldn't have really guessed that. It seemed very different as far as, like, the Werewolf one, I felt like...
It was really immersive?
Yeah, the theme, like, the puzzles you were solving made sense with the story. Mm-hmm. It all tied, everything looked really cool. This is definitely, like, a...
Do you think this is more mass market? That's what I'm trying to wonder if it's like if they're that. Trying to push it into more of a, I don't know. I mean, I was trying to think, okay, so say I just like drop this off at a friend's house and like, hey, have fun with this game. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, if I was going to pick between the two, definitely the werewolf one. It just had way more cool things going on. This definitely was simpler component-wise. And part of it is I think I do get a little bit spoiled on the escape room boxes because we've done some super awesome ones. There was nothing really wrong with this one.
No.
But it was just kind of like I've seen a lot of these types of puzzles before already. Less original. It felt less original.
I think I'd agree with that.
We all just nodded. You couldn't see it, but
yeah. I was just trying to think like if it was the originality or if it was something like actual like missing from the story. I just don't feel like the High School Hijinks had much of a story.
Well, whereas I think the difference is the components.
Sure.
I think
but
the
story too, because the Scooby-Doo one, I mean, it had an existing IP, I guess, but that escape room was like the story was so good.
Yeah.
The script, the dialogue, everything was just spot on. And this one was kind of just, I don't care who Chris is or if he went to class at 4:30. Like, I just don't know anything about him to be tied
well,
in.
Scooby-Doo was also meant to be played over possibly two sessions.
Mm-hmm.
So there was more to the game. It was an hour and a half at least. Instead of a 45-minute game.
Well, this does say 90 minutes on the box. So we were expecting.
So going
we
into
also had Hijinks. More players than the player count to
four to
finish
six.
Out.
Well, it says 4 to 6.
We had 7.5.
I mean,
what are you talking about?
Eaten cake.
Charlie was
Ryan
not a part of the thing.
Yeah, but Ryan and I did some stuff on the side
even
though we weren't
Ryan
playing.
Walked over and helped a few times.
I helped solve two of the like six puzzles. So, okay. And I wasn't playing.
We agree that we are the super
one
team.
Of the
well, here's
six
the thing.
Puzzles.
The Lady Leona's we played in 45 minutes. And I kind of was expecting going into this one that it would be about the same.
Right. You probably had more accurate expectations because you'd experienced the other one.
Yes.
But yeah, it was interesting. I mean, it was... People who enjoy escape rooms, I mean, this is another one to add to the list. It's not like a super win or a
so
downer.
Personally, I would say if you're looking at the games and you're saying, oh, 90s theme or 1920s theme, I would even say the 1920s theme was more immersive in the theme thematic-wise than the 90s version where... I don't know. It just didn't feel.
There was nothing 90s about it, for sure.
I mean, other than the art and the.
Even then, like, that could have been.
They could have used some very 90s stuff in the
like
dialogue.
Slang
in the dialogue
like that
didn't happen.
I didn't see the word rad a single time.
Yeah. I needed pogs to be introduced somewhere.
Yes. See, the theme could have been there. The designers, were they born in the 70s, 80s, 90s? 2010s. Are they younger than us?
They're probably definitely younger than us.
They didn't grow up in the 90s.
They're posers.
We actually graduated in 1998.
That's right.
We should move on to another.
We should. Great stuff. We also had the opportunity to play, I think it's called Riverboats, something like that, pretty close, from Chili Fox Games. It's a roll and write game.
Sarah's looking it up for us.
Yeah, find the exact name. I'm pretty close. Riverboat Action.
I think it's
Riverboats.
I think it's Riverboats.
Yeah.
And it's...
I want to say Riverside for some reason, but maybe it's
not. It's definitely Riverboats.
It's not Riverboats. It's something. It is something.
Riverside. I'm going to be...
It's Riverside, I
bet you it's Riverside. Anyway, continue on.
It's about a
river cruise.
A river cruise in the Arctic, maybe.
It is Riverside.
Boom! Oh! Boom!
Riverside?
Why would it be that?
You're going on excursions on the side of the river?
I suppose.
It's more about the excursions than anything.
It's pretty much a standard roll and write, except one new interesting piece that they added is you do have a modular board that your riverboat is traveling down. Yeah. And so you're rolling the dice each time. The mean average, or not average, but the mean of all the dice that you roll will determine the number of spaces.
The middle die.
The middle die will determine the number of spaces that your boat moves, and your boat will then be within reach of certain excursions that are on the sides of the board.
Which change up depending on how the board's set up.
Exactly. And so you will be filling in passenger seats on your boats, attempting to fill up rows on each of your ships so that you can get bonus seats filled in, and then just trying to score points based off of how many ship ticket sales you can send to each of those excursions as you go throughout the course of the game. Pretty neat stuff. I won, and I think I only cheated a little.
At the very beginning, which helped him get a good base.
Yeah. There's a white boat, but all the little circles on the entire page are white.
White.
So Will was like, oh, I got to fill in two white circles. Oh,
two more white circles.
And then we realized, like, later on.
I did it once.
Later on, he goes, I haven't even started my white boat. And I'm like, I thought we had a bonus for the white.
Let's back up.
You just filled in any two circles you wanted on the
page. I will say, though, getting a good start, though, like, because I was like, oh, if I can fill in two whatever circles, I can start, like, building and comboing stuff. Right. I was like, oh, if I can't combo, and I was starting to combo things near the end of the game, and you're getting extra bonuses and stuff like that, which a lot of roll and rights do that, and right. I like that kind of mm-hmm. thing in a game. So
yep. I felt like it had the good, like, you want to have that feeling where, like, I just filled in two, oh, I get to fill in two more, oh yes, one more. Yeah. Like, it had all those good feels.
Yeah.
And then there was some weird bonus score at the end that I also didn't tell anybody about.
Hey, I was okay with that one.
Yeah. It worked out for Kevin. It hurt me.
Yeah, poor Melissa. He didn't tell us that your lowest...
I didn't remember.
Well, the lowest section would then...
Double score.
Yeah, it'd score double at the scores, bottom again. Yeah. So Melissa and I tried to focus really hard on a couple mm-hmm. sections and
so
then
Will,
completely
in a way.
Neglect yeah. other areas.
I only got 4 points for that.
Same here. 4 points
so
is
even
what
with
I got
Will
on
cheating
mine.
And losing 15 points, he still pulled ahead.
Still walked away. So I probably cheated more and don't know, but I'm only admitting to the one that I realized.
But the funny thing is, second, third, and fourth place, third, and fourth were 248, 247, 246.
Yep. Yes. Very close.
Real tight game.
I'm surprised it was that close with how divergent of paths we went, really.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it'd be interesting to play that one again, especially to see how much changing up the board actually affects your final score.
Yeah.
And then definitely realizing that some of those tickets are going to score you more points. I didn't even pay attention to that.
I saw that near the end of the game because Sarah saw it at the beginning. It was getting some of those eights and sevens.
That was what I focused in the first part of the game because I was like, oh, these tickets are worth a lot of points. And oh, those ones at the top, those are not worth much.
Yeah.
But they're easier to fill in.
They are. They're a lot easier to fill in.
Yeah. Interesting stuff. So that was a lot of fun. Anybody else play some neat stuff? What else did you guys get to the table this week?
So Cosmos has put out one of a game called The Adventures of Robin Hood, which actually was a nominee for the Kenner Spiel.
You guys got to try that one?
We actually did. It is a sort of a campaign type game where you are going through an adventure with Robin Hood and his merry men through multiple, like 13 or 14 chapters, right, Melissa?
It was maybe closer to about 9.
9 or 10. Mm-hmm. But there's a point where there's a divergence, and if you make a certain decision, you go one way, mm-hmm. and a certain decision, you go the other way. But it does, at the end, bring you back to the final thing.
Okay, so same ending.
Same ending for both scenarios.
That's an adventure.
So I would actually compare this to games like Mansions of Madness and Lord of the Rings Journeys of Middle Earth, but there's no app. It's all based in or all used with a book. And
this is a hardbound book. It kind of feels like a bit of a novel that you're going through.
Yeah, I mean, it's like 300-page book.
Wow.
And it will give you the setup
that
for the adventure.
Like a novel.
Yeah.
Is it really that many? I don't know.
Oh, yeah. It's
200. It's in the 200s.
Oh, it
like
is.
Like 213 is about the end.
That's plenty.
That's still a big book.
That's a book.
So it will tell you, okay, adventure number one, here's how you set up the game, here's the story, and then it actually kind of has a tutorial to walk you through. So when you open up the game the first time, it's like, don't read the rule book yet. Start here.
You read it, didn't you, Melissa?
I
bet you did not.
I obeyed, and
she
I was
did.
Like, I should probably experience this the way most people will experience
and I'm glad
it
we
and
did.
See how it works, because I am one that would rather just read the rule book.
She wants to learn how the actual play.
You just were itching to open that rule book.
She's the type of player that wants to know every detail on how to play the game before she plays it.
You know how Will feels. He just
I was proud
chucks
of her for playing
the book
Riverside.
Aside and just jumps right in, whether or not.
I lean more towards Will. Like, let's just get going and we'll figure out.
I
always say
on Melissa's.
Well, here's the thing.
I
always
want to know
say,
every detail
yeah,
first.
But the first game is always a learning game.
Right.
Like,
you're
even today, even because of how we all played, we're like, oh, we learned how to play. So next game is going to be much, much better because we know
very
some
different.
Of the end stuff. I'm like, every game's a learning game. So I'm okay with jumping in a little bit more and saying, oh, there's an extra 15 points for that at the end. That's fine. It's a learning game. So anyway, Robin Hood is definitely thematic.
Yeah, I was going to go back to, I thought that it handled it well, the learning
the
through.
Tutorial.
So you basically play through the first adventure and you learn a lot of the basic rules. And then in the second adventure, they introduce some more and then you get to look at the rule book where it, you know, right. summarizes a lot of that stuff.
That's cool.
Yeah, so you are going through the story and meeting people. Basically, the board is laid out in basically six, I don't want to use the word puzzle pieces, but they actually are a puzzle that you put together. But it's basically six boards that you are puzzling together. And the board itself is like double layered. So you are uncovering things.
Oh, so not like inset, but like...
It's almost like advent calendar, except you take the piece completely off and you can flip it over.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, and there's things on the other side. There's things underneath that piece that you're pulling out. And so basically, as you're going around, there's people you're going to be interacting with and things you're going to be interacting with, people you're going to be fighting, and and completing the objective of what it's telling you to try to do. And a lot of times it's like you're going to have to be observant and figure out who you need to talk to in order to find whatever you're trying to find. You're trying to find a certain cloak? Well, look on the board and see if you can figure out who's got the cloak. So, and you only can move around a certain amount based on your figure.
Is it like hexes or squares or is it inches? What do you?
No. So you have wooden pieces for your characters. It's Robin Hood, Little John, Maid Marian, and Will Scarlet. And they have two standing figures. And then you have three other pieces that are running lengths. So say your standing figure is kind of like the size of a meeple, but it's an actual character.
But yeah.
And then you might have one that's half an inch long or an inch long and one that's an inch and a half. And you...
Oh, they're like 2 to 3 inches long, but that's all right.
Right. distances, whatever. Basically, you have your character on the board and then you lay the pieces
measuring
that
track.
Show them running. And that's how far they can move. And you decide how many of those pieces you want to move. If you don't use the large one, you get to rest and put a white cube in the bag. You're going to need
strength,
those white cubes. So it's a little bit, and you can't obviously run over a rock or a tree or through something. So you're positioning these wooden pieces along the board to see what you can actually reach.
Okay.
Wow. So how does it work with... are there enemies?
Yes,
that
there are enemies that are going to be revealed throughout the game. That's another interesting thing part of this game. There's one bag. In the bag are wooden discs that you're pulling out. Those colors correspond to your player colors and other things, and that's whose turn it is. So you're like, oh, Green's turn. Oh, that's Robin Hood. He gets to go.
You don't even know when you're going to get to go.
When you get to go. Whoa. And then also in the bag are other cardboard discs. And they come out at certain times, and on the cardboard disc tells you what enemies are going to be revealed and other things that will be revealed throughout the game, too. You can fight enemies with your fists or, of course, you have bows and arrows. So there's a little arrow that if you're at a certain length away, you can shoot a guard. Also in the bag are these cubes that you're throwing in. So there's a lot of things in this bag. And sometimes you're like, oh, yeah, you pulled all the discs. Let's just double check. And you're like, oh, yeah, there's another disc in the bag because there's so much in that bag. But it's kind of interesting that they just threw everything in the bag. You're not like, oh, this is the disc bag. This is the cube bag. This is the... I've known games that have different bags for different things. So that was, I kind of find that interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting. It has some of the feel of like a miniatures game where you are moving a certain amount.
Yeah. So the same guy who illustrated and designed this game is the same guy that did Legends of Andor.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yep.
I can see that now.
I could as well. Yeah, it has a similar look and a little bit of a sound to it, it sounds like.
Yeah.
So, interesting.
Cool stuff. I highly recommend this. This is probably one of my top games this year.
So the nomination made sense.
Nomination definitely made sense. Although I would say, I don't know. A Paleo won that one. I haven't played Paleo yet.
Gotta get Paleo to the table next.
Yep.
One of the other games that I had an opportunity to play recently was the new Dune Imperium. Pretty good.
Did you play this over at Southern Fried?
I did. While we were there, I had a chance to play
it. I don't know if this is my type of game, but you can explain it.
I think it could be. It's pretty much a deck builder. It's also a worker placement game at the same time, and it's got a little bit of area control in there as well. I don't remember the old movie. I saw it 100 years ago or whatever, and I haven't seen the new stuff or read about it, but I heard that it's super thematic. So the layout of the board has the salt mines where you're going to be, or the dune, I guess, whatever it is, where you're getting your spices from. And so that's going to get you money in the game. You've basically got your hand of cards is going to give you the normal stuff, like either credits that you're going to be able to buy things with or actions that you're going to be able to take. And you will place out your characters on the board based on the cards that you play. So you have to actually play a card to be able to place a character on that portion of the board. There are different like icons for whether you're like a laborer or military, or if you're one of the like high council, and you will play the card down, then put your meeple out on the board, and then take whatever action is there. A lot of the actions cost you resources, so you have to have water to even be able to go to take this action to get other resources. So a lot of like, not engine building, but just like upgrading your components so that they're better, so you can afford better things with them. And then some of them will give you opportunities to actually go and fight the other meeples that have gone to battle for that round. And so you don't have to go fight at all, but usually there's some pretty sweet rewards for first whoever gets first place and whoever has second place in that area control portion of the game as well. And so you are, just trying to build up your little resource pile, sell your spices for the most valuable set of credits that you can get. And then I think there was like maybe two different end game triggers, and I don't even specifically remember what they were, but when the game ends, then obviously whoever's been able to get the most money over the course of the game can potentially be one of the winners. I don't remember what the other win condition was, but huge board, lots and lots of stuff on it. The art for it looked really sharp. I guess it's probably from the new movie. I'm not sure if it was original art or if it's actually from the new IP, but all the art looked really cool in the game. And as goes with most deck builders, like you want to try to get just the right cards in your hand and weed out the garbage that you don't want so that you are taking really, really powerful turns each time. And as you went throughout the course of the game, like you really started to feel like, oh man, I am taking killer turns because I'm doing all the great deck building stuff, play this card to play another card to play another card to play another card. And I'm getting more workers out on the board and they're making tons of money. I had a really good experience. I think I got like second or third. I definitely didn't win. And we were also playing with like some deluxe components that aren't part of the original game. Somebody had brought in some like, I think you probably had like normal wooden blue cubes for water, but they had these really cool crystalline ice drop looking things. It was a really fun experience. Had a great time. Got to play with One Board Family and some other people that were down there for the event. And definitely would love to play it again because, as with most deck builders, you kind of learn how, oh, this faction of cards works better together than these other ones. And I would definitely try to stack my deck differently and see what I could pull off. But
I have a question.
Yes.
Does the cards affect how many workers go out? Like, are you drafting cards trying to affect how workers go out? Or how do the deck building and placing workers, so how do they interact?
You really only have like two workers to start off with. And then your cards are going to either have like icons on the side that say you can go to one of these five actions on the left side of the board, or you can send your workers out to go mine or to sell stuff at the market. So you kind of have to wait for those icons to come up in your hand. Mm-hmm. And then if they don't, then a lot of the cards are dual use. So it's like,
so
I can either use this for
where
money.
Where you can send workers.
Right. What areas of the board. And then you, or you might use the card for money. So if you're like, I can't go there, or I can, but I don't have the resources, then I'm going to just use this card for money. I'm going to buy another better card.
Okay.
I have a question about it.
Yeah.
I've heard that I know you mentioned the combat. That's against the board. But I heard there's also combat, or not combat, but there's some sort
area
of
area control.
Well, area control, but there's some sort of, not take that isn't probably the word.
Player interaction?
A lot of player interaction in this game.
Take that area control. I guess both of those are kind of the wrong thing. It's probably like area majority in the one section of the board. Take that. I wouldn't say there's any take that. Nobody was really like, okay, so there are some cards that allow you to, like, you put your tokens into the board and then it's a majority, whoever has the majority in this space. But you do have some event cards or wild cards. I don't remember what they're called. They're not part of your deck building hand. They're just some bonus cards that you can pick up from, you know, from going to the whatever the marketplace for that is called. And those were definitely mean, where it was like,
that's what I heard. I heard there's some mean stuff going in the game.
Yeah, it'd be like, remove like, three of this guy's stuff and then do the battle, you know, or whatever. Yeah, or take off,
I don't know,
all
if
his
I'd
bonuses.
Like, I've seen and heard a lot of different reviews, and based on their comments, I'm like, I don't know, that part of the game probably would just turn me off.
I wonder, I don't know, because I only played it one time, I wonder if you could win the game and not even do the area control area.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you just optimized everything else really well.
Okay.
I feel like you probably could, although the guy who did win did win a lot of the battles. So okay. I don't know. Hard to know.
It's probably integral to the game, but maybe not.
Yep. It was interesting stuff for sure. Had a great time. Looking forward to trying it out again. I think from this point, we can jump into a shout out to our sponsor.
This episode is sponsored by IV Games. Their game Mythic Mischief is on GameFound right now. This is a game where you are mythic, you are students at a mythic high school, Mythic Manor, and you're either zombies or wizards, Frankenstein's monsters, witches, all sorts of different mythical creatures, and you are in a library. And you're trying to avoid the Tome Keeper, who is picking up books and returning them to places. And you're trying to force the other students to be caught by this Tome Keeper. So this is played one versus one, or in teams against each other. And it's a lot of movement around the board, moving barriers, changing the direction of where the Tome Keeper is going, trying to manipulate the movement on the board to for your benefit and to catch the other players. Each faction has some asymmetrical powers of how they interact with the board. Kevin and I played this live on the channel. You can see the video of that. And Kevin has a overview video. Yep. So this is Mythic Mischief. It's a very puzzly game during our playthrough. There were times when we were both staring at the board, just thinking.
In silence. Now, I'm curious, what's the difference between two and four players? Do you know? Is it
team versus team?
Is it the same exact thing? Like, you just work with your team, or is there anything else that...
When you play two versus two, you have three characters that you're controlling. If you're playing four players, two on each team, you're each controlling two of a different faction. So it would be like vampires and wizards together, four characters total, and then another two characters. There are rules also for three players. I think it's like one team versus one person. It's slightly different. I haven't looked at all the rules
similar
for
gameplay.
That. But yeah, so that is Mythic Mischief. A lot of asymmetry in the game, kind of patterns and moving around, and basically some depth once you understand how to play the different factions can really think through how they move things around and how they interact with the other characters.
Yep. Try to get everyone lined up so that the Tome Keeper can just get that person.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Kevin had a good round.
Yep. Pick that students off. It's great.
So this is Mythic Mischief from IV Games. They did Moonrakers, and it is on GameFound right now.
Let's jump in and look at some of the other crowdfunding games going on in our Kickstarter Conniption.
Kickstarter Conniption!
This episode, we'll be talking about three games that are coming to Kickstarter. I believe, are they all on the 14th this time? All coming September 14th. Katie, start us off.
I knew you were going to go to me first. All right. So this one is the Stuff of Legends. This game is a game. The story behind this game is there has been a little boy who has been dragged under the bed into a world of darkness by the boogeyman.
Wait, I think I saw this movie. It has like Fred Savage in it. It's also in the 80s.
Maybe. this is based on an IP. It's not a movie.
Not
that was
that
a
one.
Comic. It was a comic book. But as the toys, you're playing as the boy's toys. And you love him so much, you are willing to go into the darkness under the bed to go and rescue him from this, like, upside down darkness world. And when you get there, you realize you're real. So it's interesting, like, the teddy bear becomes a real bear in this dark world. So that's what it means. Like, you know, like, he has a duck that becomes a real duck. Anyway. Anyway, and you all have asymmetric abilities. And you are working in a location on the board. It is a cooperative game, but it has an optional secret traitor mechanic. So depending on how many people are playing, you either will definitely have a traitor or you might have a traitor, and you kind of don't know. But you're going to be facing obstacles on the board and moving around, trying to guess the location of the boy. And it's hard to get from one location to another to try to find these different spots on the board. So you have to be pretty thrifty in your movements. And we have played this game live on our channel, so you can check that out. I've forgotten how many people it plays. Let me see. 3 to 6 players.
Yeah, I played the live play, and Katie talked about all the different locations. Well, there's only 4 possible ending locations that you have. There's like little trails that lead to those. Mm-hmm. And
there's more than 4. There has to be more than 4.
Is it 5 then?
There might be 5.
I think it might be 5. There's not very many compared to how many spaces are on the board, but you have
but you have to work so hard to get there.
Yeah. They're difficult to get to. Mm-hmm. And the way that those are set up is there are numbers 1 through 7, but you're not using all the numbers. And so you don't know which numbers are out on the board. Mm-hmm. And so you might reveal a 2. And then you make it to the other side of the board, you might reveal 5. Well, 5 could be the highest number. Mm-hmm. And you're trying to highest number.
You are trying to find the highest number. If you don't, you usually don't get to look at all. I've not played a game where you get to look at all of the possible locations. So you have to make educated guess.
Yeah, you might reveal a 1. But a 1 will be a 7.
Mm-hmm. If a 7's on the board and a 1's on the board, 1 is the correct one.
Yeah. So because it does loop.
Yes.
So
it makes it very difficult.
We played a game where the first number we revealed was a 1. And we're like, okay. And then we revealed the 7. We're like, oh, we know exactly where we need to go.
We've got to run back over there.
Was probably the shortest game we could have played.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was very interesting. We haven't even explained how the cards work. So
no,
you have cards in your hand, and there are some that are stained. And so they cause negative things to happen if you have to use them to accomplish a task.
The stained ones have better abilities on them, so you are very tempted to use them. It also helps if there is a hidden traitor. They can claim, well, I needed to do this. I'm going to use a stain card, and it has negative effects. So there's kind of this plausible, deniability
I'm not
the bad guy. I just needed to use a stained card to make this thing happen. And I know there were consequences, but
very interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot of choices being made in that game that. I mean, nothing is straightforward. So everything you do is like a choice kind of between this kind of bad thing or that kind of bad thing. And you have to really weigh out those decisions as you're playing. So, yeah, if you're interested, go check out our video on that and check out their Kickstarter. That is the Stuff of Legends. Over to Will.
So I'm looking at another Masters of the Universe game. This is Masters of the Universe Clash for Eternia from CMON. It is coming to Kickstarter. It's significantly different from the other He-Man game in gameplay, but obviously it's going to feature some really cool minis because it's coming from CMON. It's got lots of great art. It's from designer Leo Amadia and Michael Chenal. Michael has designed a lot of other IP games like Bloodborne and A Song of Fire and Ice and some of the other games that CMON has put out. It's got art from Henning Ludvigsen, and he has done tons of other like Star Wars illustration games and things like that. So going to have cool artwork for sure. The game appears to be, and if you look up their Board Game Geek page, there's almost no information on it. They even aren't nailing down whether or not it's going to feature art from the new like Netflix 2021 Masters of the Universe, or if it's all retro characters and heroes. But we'll find out. I did see a video on Dice Tower's channel, and it looks like the game is a 1 versus many. You've got a giant board with hexes on it, and you're moving around trying to achieve different missions and collect different things across the course of the board. And one guy is controlling like the horde of mini robots or bad guys that are attacking you. And then the other players are controlling the heroes. Everybody's got their own unique player powers and boards. And the minis for this game actually, I have to admit, look less cool than the minis for the other heroes of the Masters of the Universe game. These ones aren't painted, at least the ones that I saw. That could be different. You'll have to check out their Kickstarter page. I don't know what the finals look like. They looked cool. They actually looked like the skin tone. Like usually minis are like gray or whatever. Mm-hmm. These are like flesh colored ones, and they do remind me of the original like He-Man character skin tone colors of their characters, but they looked smaller. They didn't have any cool battle cats and amazing poses, and I didn't see any giant castles. So I don't know if I'm as excited about this.
No battle cats?
There's definitely a castle.
There's definitely a castle.
Mm-hmm. There had a huge teaser trailer on the castle.
Well, there needs to be one for sure. So yeah. I'll have to keep looking and find that.
Yeah. I put it on my block teaser trailer. So saw that.
I definitely.
But I didn't see a cat.
Right. There is a character. I mean, I've seen the cat move in the game, but the artwork that I remember from the original Masters or the one that we looked at two months ago.
That's called Fields of Eternia.
Yeah, Fields of Eternia. Archive. It looked cooler. Good job, other guys.
I don't think they had painted miniatures either. They were just different colors.
The ones that I saw looked amazing. I don't know if somebody already had painted them.
Yeah, that's probably what you saw.
Well, whoever's painting them, good job. I need cool looking stuff already painted, delivered to me. I'm counting on you, Simon. All right, next up, Sarah, what are you looking at?
Coming September 14th is Verdant from Flat Out Games. This is the third game they've come out now that has to do with tile laying. This one, instead of just tiles, though, you have cards, and you are working to place your house plants around the different rooms so they can grow effectively, making a cozy little home. Like the other games, this rule set is simple, where on your turn you just take one of the four cards available and then the token that's next to it, and you're either going to take a room or a plant, and you're going to stagger or alternate,
kind of a checkerboard pattern.
Checkerboard the rooms and plants in front of you, making a 3x5 grid. And the room will have a certain type of lighting on each of the four sides of the room. And then the plant that is placed next to it, you want to try and match up the lighting requirements that specific type of plant would like to have. And then you can gain a verdant token to go on top of the plant. And once the plant has enough verdancy, then it is fully grown and gets a little pot with bonus points. And you are just trying to match up all the different plants in that grid to get the right types of light. So there are some that have, obviously you could get four verdancy if the plant was in the center part of your board and not the edge. And a lot of them need like 6, 7, 8. So
yeah, more than normal,
more than you could even get from the rooms.
Yeah.
So to counteract that, there are some of the tokens, instead of just placing a fun little lamp or a couch in one of your rooms to gain some bonus points, there's some fertilizer and a watering can that you can use to help your plants grow faster.
Yeah. So this game's got like some set collection and tile placement. Tile placement and set collection, I think, is probably what you're going for. And it's harder than you think to try to figure out what room in the house to put where and then what plants to put where, because some things you're trying to get all of these things to match, and some of the things you're like, I need all these things to be different.
Yes.
So you're working in like different directions at the same time, trying to figure out how you're going to get it all to work out, grow your plants.
And it's all based on what cards happen to be out.
Mm-hmm.
So there's going to be times where, I have this one room and it is a very sunny room. And then there's plants out that need shade. And so you're like, oh,
well, if I put them over here, I may not get them grown all the way, but I'll get these other bonuses. So it's just weighing out exactly what might be the best on this specific turn. So there are some additional advanced goal cards that you can add to the game that make it even more difficult to try and but there's more victory points involved by adding a few extra bonuses at the end for some fun things like having the most pets in the house or
overall it's a pretty relaxed game too. It's just got like kind of an easygoing feel to it.
Yeah. How would you compare it to Calico and Cascadia, some of the other games that FlatOut has put out, like this one?
It's not as restricting as Calico in that you have to get this exact match tile or this specific pattern and color tile, and there's only so many in the bag.
You feel less like you failed at the end of it than you do when you play Calico.
Yeah. Yes. Agree. And you have a little more choice in what you can do because you can choose a room or a plant. And then you get to choose its location as well. So
yeah, you can place them.
It's a little more freedom.
Yeah, it's a little more freedom of where to place stuff. Even though Calico, you can place them anywhere on the board. Because there's
only get nothing for it if you put it in the wrong spot.
Yeah, the cards
and
with
ruin
the plant.
All the other hard work you have done to set it up.
Right.
The, the plant cards, there's only three types of lighting requirements, and many of them have multiple option so that it'll like full sun and partial shade. So that helps out a lot to try and get what you need.
I'd say as far as theme, though, it's actually pretty similar in the just kind of slow, chill, relaxed sort of theme.
Right,
you know, growing house plants and choosing a lamp to go in your room, you know, that has that same sort of chill feel.
Yeah, but it's still that same puzzle of trying to put the right things next to other things. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you have to decide, I'm not going to get very many points for putting this here, but it's my best option. And I might actually be able to get more points if another card comes up that goes with it. So
I kept running into the issue of like, oh, Fiddle Leaf Fern. I want one of those like so bad.
In real life.
In real life. I'm gonna fit it into my house somehow because I probably will never have one in real life. I really need it in this game. So, yeah, I ran into those type of issues.
It does have lots of trivia on all the cards, which is kind of neat. I'm sure that the lighting requirements are probably based on real life needs of the plants. The artwork for it is super gorgeous, and it looks really great.
Sybil did a good job.
Yeah, once you get it out on the table and you've got, you know, you've built your own quilt, almost like in Calico, of room color, all staggered. It just looks really nice out on the table. I think this is going to be a popular one. It clicks a lot of boxes.
I already have an idea for their expansion to this. They could add on a water or moisture requirement for these plants because that's why I won't probably ever have a fiddle leaf fig is because they require a lot of moisture and it's really easy to kill them. And I can't. Like, they have to have a lot of moisture in the air, not necessarily in the soil. So I'm like, oh, then you have to...
Spray bottle, water droplet tokens.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they could probably add something to it that has that kind of thing, too. I think about it too much because I like plants. I have a whole section of my house devoted to plants.
Mine is a very small section devoted to plants because most of mine die. Anyway, fortunately, I do well of keeping all my plants well taken care of in Verdant. So hopefully you will too if you check out this game coming to Kickstarter September 14th from FlatOut Games.
Now, there are a number of other games that are going to be debuting at Gen Con, not necessarily Kickstarters, but games that are going to be published. We actually put together a video recently on our channel if you want to check out some of the games that we're anticipating.
What channel? Our YouTube channel?
That one. tantrumhouse.com/tantrumhouse, I think, on YouTube. And we put together a top 10 list of games that we are anticipating checking out at Gen Con. Some of them we've
it
already had.
It was way more than 10. Remember Melissa
had some honorable mentions in there.
I was to say, it was like, I'll talk, and then Melissa will talk, and then Kevin will talk, and Melissa will talk, and then Will had another one, and then we had to get back to Melissa.
I did a lot of research. There's lots of cool things.
Lots of
good
games.
She was excited about a lot of things.
As she should be.
I found those pictures of the Robin Hood meeples. There you go. You can see them.
See
what I'm saying? They're like, they're inches. Sorry. Sorry to interrupt your regular schedule program.
That is a neat little meeple shape.
Yep. Anyway.
Will Robin Hood be available at Gen Con?
I think it might be.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, that was not confident.
You can check the Cosmos booth and see.
It'd be cool if it was. They'd be a hot commodity.
One thing I'm kind of interested in seeing this year, we know Gen Con won't be quite as big as normal, but I think there's going to be a nice focus on a lot of the smaller publishers. Some of the bigger publishers have decided to sit out this year. And
which is fine.
Yeah, it's okay. I think a lot of them, they have the resources to have these gigantic booths and everything. And I think it'll be a nice breath of fresh air to try and really support these smaller publishers that probably
see some of the little
guys. They probably have, in some cases, a little bit harder time having the reach of that the bigger publishers have for marketing and all that stuff. So it'll be nice to help out the smaller ones.
I'm wondering, I know they're going to have the booths spaced out more. I don't know. Does that mean that they're going to keep the, because they usually use a number of halls to space them all out. I just don't know. What is that? It's not going to, whenever we get there, we're going to see what it really looked like. Because we can see it on paper. And then when we actually get there, it's like, oh, this is what it actually looks like.
Yeah, it looks like the same size hall, same amount of space that they've used on the little maps that they've put together. It'll be interesting. Like, are those aisles wider? And we just don't realize it looking down on the grid. But we are going to be there. The majority of the Tantrum House crew will be helping other publishers or doing media stuff.
I think it's the first year that most of us, because usually it's at Gen Con.
It's usually like three or four.
It's usually just the Meadows and the Delps, right?
And or, well, right? Sometimes it's not
I've
even
been,
all of us.
I've been at least twice to Gen Con.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and there's been years where like Sarah didn't go and just me and Kevin went, or me and Kevin and Melissa or something. But
there was one time I think it was just me, Melissa, Sarah, and Ryan went.
Yeah. I think we've kind of
that was a random one
with kids and work schedules that usually at least one of each family has come.
Will and Sarah are going to be there.
Yep.
We're going to be working at Genius Games' booth.
With?
Katie's going to be there as well.
I am going to be working at Genius as well.
Jonah's joining us too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think both of the Larrys are. So it's going to be a party
that
at the Genius
so
Games booth.
That was so random to have both the Larrys
And if you
there.
Don't want to go to Genius Games booth, you can go
so,
ahead.
So, wait. Are you having Larry and Larry teach games?
Genius Games booth.
Right.
Do they even know what they got volunteered into?
Yes. That's as it funny. Turns out, we're not telling them about how to play any of the games. Go
imagine?
And find out from Larry and Larry how to play.
So if you're lost what we're talking about, our Saturday morning board game show has a segment at the end where the two Larrys, Larry and Larry, teach a game, sort of.
Air quotes all over that.
Without ever looking at the rules. So basically they just make up stuff.
Right, or have you even seen the game in some cases? They literally pull it out of the table and then chaos.
Yeah. Melissa and I will be at the CGE room. CGE doesn't have a booth. They have a room outside of the hall, and they said it's bigger than they've ever had before.
Yeah, I wonder if it's still upstairs. Maybe they absorbed the Rio Grande room.
Ooh, that'd be cool. Anyway, so come join us Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. Yeah. Melissa will be there. Melissa and I will be there.
CGE knows how to put on a show. They usually have like crazy high banners. And
they spend a lot of money at Gen Con.
They do. It's exciting stuff. Yep. So you guys will be demoing what kind of games?
Well, I'm wondering, because usually we get a t-shirt based on like their hit
the
game.
Theme,
so we've got
a
Letter Jam t-shirt. We've got we've got tons of Codenames t-shirts, of course.
Right.
And we've got a Pictomania t-shirt.
I've got a Sanctum shirt from the year.
Did you?
It's like a giant devil on my chest.
Trap Words one. So I'm
Galaxy Trucker.
That's what I'm wondering. It's either going to be, I was having a discussion, Galaxy Trucker or Lost Ruins of Arnok.
Right.
Because they never really had a good convention circuit for Lost Ruins. Yep. And they have an expansion coming out
at Essen.
So I'm wondering if they'll push the Lost Ruins. But I think I'm thinking they'll be Galaxy Trucker. I agree. That'd be cool. That'd be a cool t-shirt. It's got cool art on it.
Yeah, that's fun.
So, anyway.
So you guys will be teaching, obviously, Legends of Arnok, Galaxy Trucker, the new expansion.
I'm going to be teaching a lot of Adrenaline and Dungeon Pets.
Dungeon Pets. Okay, so not many people know Dungeon Pets, so Kevin and I both got put on it several times.
Yep. You got to know the classics.
Something.
We're going to be playing Power Failure, which is a fun one. It's kind of a little bit of dexterity, but a deck set building, set collection game.
It's a push your luck, too. For sure.
Got some of that. Definitely, if you want to avoid the dexterity or not. We'll be playing Genotype, which they kickstarted last year, and the new additions for that are out. And then Cellulose, I think, is their other newest one that we'll be playing. They'll have several others as well, but I think those are the three main new ones.
What do you think the biggest publisher that's going to be there? Do you know? What do you think? Who do you think is going to be there that's the biggest one?
I mean, is Asmodee?
Nope. They're not going to be there.
None of their even like lowerling peoples?
Nope.
Interesting.
So like in the past, like Upper Deck, remember they like brought a tractor trailer in once?
Are they the ones that had the Harry Potter booth that was all decked out?
No, that's the op.
That is the op?
Mm-hmm.
Are you sure it was the op? Which one had like it felt like you were walking into a classroom at Harry Potter?
That was the op.
Oh.
But Upper Decks had like they did like the
shark attack one.
Yeah. They've had some whole jungle, the beach scene, jungle themes. But they're not going to be there this year. So
yeah, maybe you guys, maybe CG will be the
yeah. But they're not in the hall.
Not even in the hall.
Well, not even in the hall.
Is Renegade Games going to be there?
I don't know.
I think so.
They don't have.
No, they're not coming to Essen, but they are coming to
Gen Con. They don't have a big booth section though, unless they bought a bigger one.
Well, that's what I was saying. Like they've published enough games, they could easily be the big dog if there was.
Sorry, Bunny was under the table.
Scared you?
No, it tickled my
big dog attack. So we'll be heading to Gen Con. That'll be this week. If you're listening to this one, we'll be hanging out there. We would love to see you. So if you're going to be at Gen Con, definitely hunt us down. Come find us.
Come say hey.
Yeah,
play games with us.
Email kevin@tantrumhouse.com, kevin@tantrumhouse.com, and we can, you know, meet each other.
Hang out. It'll be super fun.
And
then Sarah and I are going to be at Origins. That'll be 2 weeks later in Columbus, Ohio. And I think that's going to be a tiny one as well, but we're looking forward to hanging out with everybody that's there. We're going to be demoing with 25th Century Games at that event, and so we're looking forward to hanging out with their team and playing a bunch of games in Ohio.
And then we have Essen 2 weeks after that.
How's that even happen? That's so
crazy.
Fast.
Oh, I'm actually bringing up the exhibitor hall map.
I was looking for it. I couldn't find it.
I finally found it.
I feel like all of these big conventions are all really tight this year. I mean,
like so close to each other.
Yeah, they're not usually all like packed within the same like 6 weeks,
right,
but they
sure.
are this time.
Yeah, tried to push it back later in the year in hopes of having looser regulations and better health for everybody.
I think it's not going that direction anymore.
No, Steve Jackson, I was going to say,
I think it would have been better to just have them at their regular times and spread out so people could have some space in between each one of them. We're here. So
some of the big.
Big
shapes on the thing. We have Steve Jackson Games has a big presence. eBay has a huge. Has eBay been there before?
They have, but they've always kind of been just tucked back in the corner, I think.
Gale Force 9 has a pretty big presence. BoardGameTables.com has a pretty big presence. WizKids.
There we go. WizKids.
WizKids will have it. Floodgate Games. They have like a nice size booth.
AEG will be there doing their big game night.
But I don't see where they're Catalyst Games. Anyway.
Plenty of stuff to check out. I'm sure there'll be lots of gaming going on the entire time. If we can stay up late enough, we'll party, I'm sure, in hotels or wherever we'll be out for the evenings. Should be lots of fun. If you're going to be there, shoot Kevin a line. Let us know. We'd love to connect.
Yeah. Maybe we can get a game at CGE room after hours.
Maybe.
We'll try it out.
We should probably plan on these things earlier, but we'll see. We'll let you know. All right. Well, thank you guys so much for tuning in. Hope you had a great time. Check out the stuff that's on Kickstarter. Say hi to us on postcards and emails and all those things. You'll hear the addresses in just a second. Other than that, I think that's it.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Tantrum House Board Game Podcast. If you liked any part of this at all, find and follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and tantrumhouse.com. Like us, share us, email us, call us, or send us a postcard to Tantrum House, 306 Berry Drive, that's B-A-R-R-Y, Greer, South Carolina, 29650. Bye.
Whoa, did anybody hang around? Did you guys, we didn't even tell you that we might do spoilers after the show. If you're still listening and you don't want to hear about the new Marvel movie, Shang-Chi, then stop right now.
This is your chance, as Will said, to hang up. Hang up.
they don't have to listen. We're not forcing them to. We had an opportunity to see it this past weekend. Thought it was super great. I at least thought it was super great. And yeah, let's chat about it. So, Katie, you got to see it. When did you go? Did you and Ryan see it both?
Yeah, Ryan and I got to sneak out without the kids.
Ooh,
on a date night.
Got to do
go,
it.
Yeah, to go see it. And I will also try to give some of Ryan's opinions on it.
Oh, good.
Because Ryan, I feel like, always has really good opinions. And he's not here for these spoiler events.
Ryan, as you edit this podcast, just feel free to insert your comments and be like, no, Katie, that's not what I said.
Kevin and Melissa actually slipped out.
They did. They're because like, don't spoil it.
They have not seen it yet. So they were going to, they left so they didn't have to hear the spoilers.
Yeah, it's too bad Jonah's not here too. He got to see it with us as well. We watched it, I think, like opening day or whatever. It was super fun. I very much enjoyed it. Liked a lot of the things that they had going on. Marvel always does a great job of interacting, like intertwining humor with their action.
Mm-hmm.
And they did that yet again, but then they also still added in like the, you know, Asian oriental martial arts, you know, fight scenes that we haven't really seen a whole lot of in other Marvel movies. And they were able to pull it off with, you know, all three of them combined into one new genre. I very much enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was kind of nice to have a slightly different type of movie from Marvel.
It definitely felt different.
It wasn't the typical action that we have been used to with all this.
And love.
Okay, yes. And like Will said, I really appreciated the martial arts in this one. As you know, Will has a martial arts background, so the fight scenes were fantastic. They did an excellent
job. They did
job.
A great job with choreography on yes. that one. There yes. are several times in the movie. All right, Ryan never leans over to talk to me. I always lean over and initiate something, and he sort of just like, yeah, 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 push, hush, hush. So this is stuff I talked about during the movie, and then later he addressed with me later.
Okay.
We did talk about how good the choreography was, and yes. there were several times. It was like, wow, it's like they did a great job making the scene look, one, like amazing, and two, at least pretty believable
right.
in what they could do and did do with the fight scenes.
Yeah,
so. I agree. The it was more believable fighting because it's not just the same punching and whatever that
throwing.
Yeah, that you can do with someone who doesn't have the martial arts background.
Yeah.
So it does make it a little more believable. Like, oh, I've seen Will actually use this move before on somebody. You know, and, like
right, like when he was swinging around the.
They're not
with
like
the 10 ring. No,
knocking. They're not like knocking buildings over because this is not the Hulk, you know, and things like that. So it was very different fight scene style than a lot of the other Marvel movies, which I thought was really fun. The rings part of it, the rings on the arms were used in really fun, creative
yes.
ways. And I really appreciate whenever they use something, what it feels like, to its full potential.
Yeah.
I was really surprised at how fast Sean / Shang-Chi was able to quickly
joke.
Adapt to a weapon he had never used before.
Right.
It was a little surprising, but he used it really well. And it was the only time in the movie that Ryan leaned over and said, whoa.
Yeah, I had that same thought, which always happens. Like the guy who's never practiced with these things is suddenly as good as the master who's had them for 3,000 years or whatever. But obviously he had been training him as a kid. The thing that you were saying that was interesting is that they really did end up using these weapons almost like other weapons that they would have already trained with. And so they kind of treated them like nunchucks that they were swinging around, or the rope with the spearhead on it, or, you know, just throwing stars and things like that.
The part that we thought was particularly interesting is when he jumps using them. He steps on them as he's trying to elevate himself in the air.
If you saw on our last Saturday Morning Board Game show, we talked about this a little bit after that episode as well. And that was one of my favorite scenes when he throws it into the air, steps on it, kicks his dad in the face. I was like, what a sweet move.
Yeah.
One other part of the movie that I enjoyed were some of the new creatures. Oh. And we mentioned before that
chicken, pig, rabbit.
Yes. that they weren't like too shocked to see them. And I was like, but this is after the blip. So they've already seen aliens and other things. So it wasn't as surprising that these existed.
Well, and I don't know about the chicken, pig, alien thing, but there was a lot of the other creatures are things that are actually represented in ancient Chinese art. And like the foo dogs and things like that. So these are things that they would have seen illustrations of. Now, I think actually I'd just say it was like artists didn't really realize what something looked like and were trying to make up something. But they made sense in the context where you're like, oh, so these, you know, in this movie, these are actual creatures. They're just from this other realm, right. You know, mm-hmm. and yep, some ancient artist somewhere saw it and painted it. So,
yeah, I thought they did a great job on bringing that into the movie. I also, we talked about the fight scenes earlier, but I think they did a really fantastic job of putting us in different scenarios where the fight scenes were more interesting. Like the bus scene was a crazy good fight scene that could have happened on a subway car, which we've seen a lot of those types of fights, but then you wouldn't have had the like shifting to the left and falling out the windows and turning hard corners. So they picked some really great locations throughout the course of the movie. Everywhere they went, it was like mm-hmm. super beautiful. I even really enjoyed the just the bamboo forest concept, that it was like growing in behind them and then moving and shifting and stuff.
They're like, oh yeah, that forest is going to eat us if we don't make it.
Right. Very interesting. And then probably, I was thinking about this later, like one of my favorite things, we just watched Iron Man 3 again just recently. And the fact that they pulled in the original Mandarin and they've got the Mandarin?
Yes, yeah.
The Ten Rings, like they explained why that was kind of goofy before. Like they did a really great job of sealing up some story arcs and, you know, mm-hmm. 10 movies later, I don't even know how many there have been in between, but they just did such a good job of continuing the story.
They pulled it in well and tied it in, because as Ryan points out, Shang-Chi is in the comic books the son of the Mandarin. And in this one, of course, they explain it away with somebody wanted to use my image and how people fear me. And so they tried to use that, but they didn't know who I was.
Right.
So I didn't enjoy that. I'm going to say this, and I'm like rooting so hard for this. I was so excited to see Awkwafina in this movie mm-hmm. as a potential love interest, as a quirky, funny sidekick character. Like, how often is the comic relief in the movie a potential love interest? Mm. That, like, never happens. I felt like it was so refreshing to see that as a potential storyline. Now, they very much like, oh yeah, we're just friends. But, you know, like, you're always kind of like, well, they're like really good
she
friends.
She definitely wants to be more than friends. But I did like that they kept it, like they didn't go the romantic route. Even though they've been friends for a long time, they could have pulled that in. And I like that they will potentially build into that.
I know. I think it could make a really fun and interesting love story. And it's not going to be the typical love story if it happens. I mean, yep. They don't have to go that direction. But I am so pulling for it because it's felt so fresh to me to have the quirky sidekick character suddenly be a potential love interest.
It
was so unique as far as storytelling goes.
Yeah. Great new stuff all the time. I also just super enjoyed the visual effects in this. The final fight scene, you know, in several of the big title movies like Endgame and Infinity War or whatever, huge visual explosions and craziness and greatness. And I very much enjoyed those. When we watched Black Widow, it was okay, but it definitely, and even though there were plenty of like crazy helicopter exploding, crashing things, didn't feel nearly as epic as the final hang 1,000 feet in the air while I do the sweet Tai Chi moves with the rings in the guy's gut and dragon swirling around and water being awesome. Like the eye candy was impressive. I very thoroughly enjoyed that in this movie.
Yeah.
I just want to say, what the heck has Wong been doing this whole time? I thought he was off saving the world or other galaxies.
He's rigging fights.
He's rigging fights with Abomination.
Making money.
That was great.
That was hilarious. That was pretty funny.
I am glad to see him in it again. And he's probably in the rest of the movies coming up.
I'm sure he is.
It's like, what? Thought he was saving the world this whole time.
Yeah. You thought he's out doing something important. He's making...
fixing the time stream somewhere. No, he's just throwing fights.
Something that Ryan and I talked about as well is the timeliness for having an Asian-themed superhero. So, like, it was very Asian, and for us, we know that Marvel has to appeal to an Asian market to be able to fund their huge budgets. So they have to be able to pull in ticket sales from Asian countries. So that's why there are a lot of fight scenes in Asian countries, because there's some familiarity. And of course, that's more interesting to them. But it was interesting because it sort of flipped on its head what Marvel movies are, because as a typical American, we had to read a lot of the movie. And that normally it's the Asian people who are, you know, having to read the Marvel movies most of the time. So I thought that was really interesting to see that flip on its head. And it was neat to see a little more of a culture and things like that. I know a lot of that's like some of that pseudo culture, you know, obviously. But
I definitely enjoyed the Awkwafina character. Like, I've seen her as a comedian in other bits, and she can go over the top and is super funny, and I find her hilarious. In this movie, she felt a little restrained, but she played the character very well. So
she did.
It did have the quirky funniness. It did. Like, I wanted there to be some crazy loud moment or something, but overall, I think they picked a really good balance for, like, where to plug her character in.
Yeah. There was, like, a couple of things we talked about, too. There was a little bit, like, this was another time where I leaned over and talked to Ryan in the middle of the movie. It was very in, and we had just seen all of this fantasy stuff go on, which I thought was a little odd, because usually Marvel doesn't venture into the fantasy realm as much. They did explain it away with this is a different dimension sort of thing, so it still sort of fit in the sci-fi realm. But I told Ryan, as we like watched the dragon, like go back down into the water and stuff, I said, there needs to be some sort of normal scene after this to just make it feel grounded. I need to see them discussing this bizarre stuff that just happened in some normal setting.
And then
immediately the scene starts where they're talking to their friends in the bar.
It was a great wrap up for sure.
It was awesome. And,
you're mocking me.
Ryan's like, the most unbelievable part of this movie is that Wong invited Awkwafina along. He's like, why was she there? Like, she shot a bow once.
And she's an amazing shot.
Hawkeye's not on the Avengers anymore. We got to have an archer. You've shot an arrow once.
You're in.
You know, we both kind of discussed that it probably would have been a little more believable if he had invited Shang-Chi along, and then, and Shang-Chi said something like,
"Hey, you coming?
You know, like, hey, are you coming? You know, like, come with me or something."
Wong is pretty chill, though, so I think he probably, like, knew that was the deal. I did think earlier in the movie, like, wait a minute, you can still kick butt with just 5 of the rings. Why don't you give some to your sister? Like, I feel like you guys could do twice as good if you just shared a couple of these rings with her. Give one to Katie. I mean, just, you guys could be a way better team if you were to hog it all the rings. No, what you were saying, that's what I was saying at the beginning. Like, I thought they did a great job of pulling in the mystical and the Asian influenced, you know, mythologies with sci-fi, with fighting, with comedy. Like, what a great combination of storytelling pieces all put together in a really, really great way.
Yeah. Something that I think they pulled in from Asian movies specifically that I really enjoyed was excellent use of color in the scenes. Mm-hmm. Now, we watch a bunch of critiques about how different movies do different cinematic things to make things, but specifically Asian movies tend to have color as a huge signifier for a lot of things, and they did an excellent job pulling in a bunch of beautiful and rich colors in the scenes, and I think there were several times I just thought, this is amazing. This color palette is spot on. I don't know who they got to do that, but kudos. That was great.
I think we kind of go the opposite way in a lot of movies. Like certain countries are just, they just put a filter over the whole, like half the movie that's shot in this area. Mm-hmm. You know, this did a good job of having a variety mm-hmm. of stuff that probably meant more than we realized watching it once.
Oh yeah.
I'd love to go back and watch it again and pay attention to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be interesting. Also, I'm sure some YouTuber out there has done this, but like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon kind of set the tone for what these types of movies were like, you know, a decade ago, 2 decades ago, whenever that came out. And you're very right. Like, I specifically remember the autumn fight scene where there's like red leaves swirling all over from that movie. It wouldn't surprise me if some of the choreography that they used in this movie replicates what we saw in that original movie, and I'm sure probably color palettes as well. So much to pull from, so much to grow into. What do you think about the previews for the Eternals?
Well, I will say I've already seen several previews, so I'm going to say I think that's where those rings came from. I think the Eternals brought those rings with them, and somehow Shang-Chi's father got a hold of them. I don't know how he got a hold of them, but that's my theory as a fan.
Yeah.
Without having seen The Eternals yet.
Right. With the after credits, it's obvious. First off, I thought it was weird. Like, this dude's been around for 2,000 years. He was supposedly, like, Shao Kahn and did all this other stuff. And Wong, who's got the best library ever, has never heard of these. What? But I definitely agree. They've obviously been around somewhere, came from somewhere, super old. Mm-hmm. I think the casting choices for The Eternals is great.
I think in general it is. I'm just going to say I don't love that Angelina Jolie's in it. And I say that because I think she's such a recognizable person.
Well, I think all of them are. And that's the crazy thing. They're very like, they have very big personalities outside yeah. of the Marvel movies. And because they did it with several of them, I'm okay.
Maybe.
With that.
I think
these Eternals are going to be crazy.
I'm not sure why, and maybe it's just something with her. I have a hard time seeing her as anybody but herself. So my first thought is like all the others, and I was like, oh, look at these new characters. That's kind of fun. Oh, why is Angelina Jolie in the Marvel Universe? You know? So
yep,
I don't know.
See.
I want to see her act really well and be somebody so different that I forget who she is.
It's a good goal.
I want to see that because that's what I want to expect.
She's a good enough actress. I think she can pull it off. Some of the other ones, I might question. I might see them a little more as maybe them or some of the other characters they've played. I've seen her in so many things that and some of them have been very different mm-hmm. that I think she'll be able to pull it off. We'll see if everybody else can too. I think they will. I think Marvel tries to help in the dialogue and I think everything going on that they make sure that it's believable.
Okay. I hope so. I think The Eternals looks good and I'm excited for it.
Yes, and watching this one got me even more excited because I was like, oh, I'm ready. Give me the next one. Let's do it.
Yep. As I agree. I don't feel like the Shang-Chi advertising made me like super excited about it.
Agreed.
But I am very glad that I would see it.
Yep.
I am.
I'm really glad to see it again. has records already. I think that says something like even in during, you know, we don't have everything open back up yet in the U.S. at least and worldwide and it still broke records. I think that says something very excited
it was
to have
the only
a
choice too.
Well, yeah. Well, yes, they, but they, I, yeah. I think at this point you have to make a special. It's just not. I'm going out to the movies. Like
oh,
we haven't
let me
been
see
doing.
What's on. Yeah,
we haven't been doing that. I went specifically out to see this movie.
Yep.
So very yeah. cool. Great job, Marvel.
There it is. If you haven't checked it out, then we just ruined everything for you. And if you have checked it out, then you probably enjoyed it as well as we did. Thank you guys for listening. If you have great thoughts about the movie and you want to know, let us know about them. Hit us up on Facebook and YouTube and all that good things, and we'll chat about it.
be great.
Let's go to the Hotel California.
I know, that was great.